Welcome back to the Presidential Transition Edition of the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and my guests today are David Eagles, Director of the Center for Presidential Transition at the Partnership for Public Service, and Dan Chenock, Executive Director of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. New administrations too often prioritize policy expertise over operational and leadership skills, particularly when selecting political appointees. Here's Dan Chenock on the challenges faced staffing up the new administration, and he provides some key best practices in this area.
So roughly 4,000 political positions. They're divided up into several categories. Basically, if you think about it in types of people, there are the cabinet secretaries, who you're seeing in the news now, and the White House leadership positions. Then there are the agency heads who are not cabinet level secretaries, but they're running important functions of government. Those can be either independent agencies or separate agencies, I should say, independent, not necessarily independent in a traditional definition, but standalone agencies that don't have cabinet rank. They can also be major bureaus within departments. So that's a second group, is really people that are running large operations. I would say that deputy secretaries, the COOs of the government, are also another category to work at. And then supporting all of those three categories is all of the staff positions, whether they're White House staff, working for the White House leadership positions, whether they're agency staff. And that those 4,000 people then basically work with 7,000 career SES executives and then, of course, the 3 million members of the federal civilian and military workforce. The author of the report that came out of the work we did around establishing a strong political career interface, Doug Brooks, who was a former director of the Office of Personnel Management and a former leader of personnel mission for DOD, talked about the importance of finding qualified people with experience and expertise in the area that they were working in, being able to fill that role quickly because they had managed and led in those areas before. They didn't necessarily have to manage an operation, but they know the terrain. They could come in and hit the ground running. I'd say another element to staffing up successfully is finding people that understand the network and how to leverage the networks in which they work. And that can be people who don't necessarily have to have lived in D.C. before. They could be people new to it, but who understand the importance of reaching out and understanding different stakeholder groups, understanding the fact that it's not just your internal operation that matters for the achievement of mission, but it's Congress, it's interest groups, it's the press, and how to work the larger community.
Yes, so there are about 4,000 political appointments that they have to make, and that number does not even include some of the part-time boards and commissions and things like that, which can – that number could actually grow fairly exponentially. So it's a big apparatus, and it's fascinating that all 4,000 quit at the exact same minute on January 20th, right?
So people probably don't realize that.
Yeah, it really is to the same minute, right? It all stops, and so – I think your first point on executive talent is you just got to get your folks in for the incoming teams. There's no excuse, again, not to have those critical decision makers. Again, I mentioned the period of vulnerability in the country. Like if something were to happen, you need people there to make decisions. And I go back 8 years ago, there was actually a credible threat on President Obama on Inauguration Day. And you talk to Josh Bolton, who was the outgoing George W. Bush chief of staff. And he talks about how there just weren't people there to make decisions if something were to happen, right? How would that actually shake out? And so we can't avoid that. So you've got to have your people in place. The second big item that's a big part of our this roadmap that we put together with IBM is thinking about joint teams of political appointees and career executives. Just thinking about it differently. Don't exclude politicals necessarily. The career workforce necessarily, bring them into the decision-making process with politicals and think about it from an enterprise-wide approach, right? There are a set of councils that you can utilize in government, and these ought to be around the things that are most important to the president-elect. If you want to get six things done in the first 200 days, you need to figure out how you're going to engage the full workforce around it. And so you have to think creatively around pulling joint teams together versus just exclusionary teams.
David Eagles, director of the Center for Presidential Transition at the Partnership for Public Service, elaborates on the benefits of creating a strong central management team right from the beginning.
History speaks to this. It's the time you have to do it. Otherwise, once you're in office, it can be very difficult. And so that's why they actually have to set the underpinnings of a good structure, a good governance structure, right? And I go, any new CEO of any private sector organization has a plan to execute his vision before he gets in there. You have to think through that stuff. And so it's really important to think about those entities that surround the president. And again, there are councils scattered throughout the federal government that could focus on these types of issues, and simply just understanding what they are and how to leverage them. Mm-hmm. You know, I go back, even the cabinet itself is often underutilized in history. I mean, and you go to a lot of examples where presidents don't even convene their cabinets for 9 months or 12 months. I mean, it's really fascinating how thinking about governing and actually what your governance plan is often an afterthought for these presidents as well. Mm-hmm. And so that's a basic principle, but that's something that they should be designing, and we feel confident they are, but they got to be ready to execute that on the first day.
Given the number of positions to fill, analysis shows that 70% of the time spent filling political appointees is under the control of the White House. Dan Chenick explains how the incoming White House can better facilitate this process.
Right. So that's interesting. And of course, I worked on a transition in 2008, so saw this process firsthand as part of that transition. I would say first is from the people side is knowing what are the key jobs and the job descriptions so that you know kind of what you're looking for. And there are various resources available. The Plum Book, which has a large number of leadership jobs, and it's sort of an ongoing perennial bestseller in the Washington world. There's work done by the partnership around creating job descriptions for a number of key positions, which hadn't really been brought together in one place. Brookings has done some work on this as well. So knowing sort of what the jobs are, what the job descriptions are, very important for a transition operation. Our report talked about the fact that you can use new technologies and analytical tools to analyze the tens of thousands of resumes that come in from people that are looking interested in working for the government and filling those 4,000 positions. So you don't have to have just doing it by hand. You can actually take commercial best practice and look for keywords and really narrow down and kind of focus in quickly on doing the hand analysis of the small number of highly qualified applicants. There are a couple of resources that are important, I think, for understanding what it takes to be successful. One is the Center's own recent update of our book, Getting It Done, which talks about how you can be successful in Washington, so looking for those kinds of skills. Another book, Ed DeSev, who wrote one of our other transition series reports, also recently issued a President's Appointees Handbook, where he talked about what it takes to be successful as a presidential appointee. And I think those are both resources that are helpful.
The incoming administration's political leadership team will not be doing this all alone. They will be supported by 7,200 members of the Senior Executive Service. David Eagles highlights the steps the incoming administration can take to strengthen the talent of the SES.
It's a really great question, and I think there's a lot of things that could be done there. One is, you know, I go back, it almost gets to the second recommendation in our management roadmap, which is around treating government as an integrated enterprise. In order to do that, it's important folks in these senior ranks get good experience with other agencies that are out there, just part of the natural rotation that they ought to be doing. And there's a lot more that the government can do to encourage that rotation. I mean, again, the fact that the vast majority of these folks in senior positions have been just in that agency, you know, those are things that we can really, really improve here. You know, the second piece is, one is they ought to be thinking a lot about what's important for these incoming teams. Again, it's a fascinating process prior to the election because it's basically two parallel processes. The incoming team is trying to guess at what the agencies are doing, and the agencies are trying to guess what the incoming team wants. And it all comes to head after the election, and it's just really funny. I shouldn't say funny, but it's a scramble that happens right after the election, right, where these teams try to figure each other out. But this is that time to really listen, that senior cadre out to listen to these teams, understand what their priorities are. And what I would say is this is not the time to sit on your hands. Like, this is the time to be proactive. They will want to know their major decisions over the next 30 to 60 to 90 days, what events are coming up, what's working well in your organization. Again, a critical part of this management topic is keeping the things that are working well there, right? And so most of your quick wins of an incoming team are not new policy promises. Almost, again, I mean, you look back in time, your quick wins come from taking things that are already working well. You could put another coat of paint on them. You call them something else if you want to. But it's about getting those things done, getting those things across the finish line. And that really is about what good management, good execution is all about. Like, let's not start from scratch all over again. Let's not add more layers of this and that. Like, let's actually learn from what's working well and improve upon them.
So one of the things that the report talked about is to have a regular dialogue with the senior executive service and other senior executive series in the government. The SES is the largest one, but there are other series as well. Set up a meeting early with the SES and you know, meet periodically, whether that's annually or biennially. Don't do it once and then, you know, not again in the administration or maybe in the last year. Have some sort of a dialogue with that team. That can really energize the career executives. Another thing that we talked about in the report was the creation of a subset of the SES who's really responsible for managing large operations, sort of a leadership cadre of SES leaders who understand the importance of managing programs that are serving millions of Americans and delivering information dollars. That could be healthcare or education, tax, transportation. These are different than policy jobs. They're more operational type jobs, more like a private sector operation. And creating an esprit de corps among that community is something that we think would be a helpful addition to that part of the SES that really matters for the functioning of government. I know that there's a new head of the Senior Executive Association. Partnering with that enterprise, I think, also can help strengthen the SES in terms of creating pathways for them to understand the value of the profession and their role in the profession as leaders in government.
Why is it so important to treat government as an integrated enterprise? We will explore this question and so much more when this presidential edition of the Business of Government Hour returns.